Brewing Company presents Sports Talk 790 Astroline.
Astroline.
The official off-season show of Astros baseball.
World Series champions!
This is where we talk about your champs. Join the show. Post your questions and comments on social media. Just be sure to hashtag Astroline.
See you later!
Go Astros!
We're Championship City.
Live from Plucker's Wing Bar on Shepherd, Sports Talk 790 Astroline starts now.
Live from Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 North Shepherd, you're listening to Astroline. Astroline's brought to you by Carbock Brewing Company. I'm Steve Sparks, the Astros radio broadcaster. And we've got a great guest here today, former Astro, longtime major leaguer. And it's Jeff Blum, who's the color analyst for the TV broadcast for the Astros, now on AT&T Sportsnet.
You don't even know
Southwest.
Who I work for.
AT&T Sportsnet
Southwest.
You just
know I get on the plane, I get on the bus, and I show up every day to bug you.
And you take my money on the golf course.
Yeah, one day out of the year.
Jeff Blum. Blummer, thanks a lot for coming out here.
It is good to be here, and it's good to see everybody in Pluckers.
And it's phenomenal that we've got an opportunity to talk about this Astros team, and what we saw with this team is that they were able to come out there and win a World Series. And you and I have been with this team for the last 5 years, and to go through and see the inner workings of this team, how special was that for you to watch things come to fruition after all that time?
It felt a little bit like a proud parent, you know, you watching this team grow a little bit. But it was interesting when we both got hired, because we got hired at the beginning of the process also. We were learning our way around. You had a little more experience than I did. But watching and listening to Jeff Luhnow and Jim Crane talk about this ball club and what their plan was, we keep hearing the term process. But we actually got to see it unfold, much like the fans did here in Houston. And it was remarkable to see some of these guys come up through the minor leagues, because that was our focus on a lot of the shows when I started in 2013-14.
Talk about the minor leaguers.
Was talk about the future. And then they got here, and they lived up to and exceeded my expectations of what these guys could do. And now they're getting fitted for rings, and it's awesome to see.
It was the transparency, I thought, Blummer, that the team was able to go out there and say, hey, there are going to be some tough times. And if you stick with us, it's going to be worth it. And we were in the back hallways, if you will, talking about, are they going to be able to be patient enough to get through this? Because for two or three years when we first started in 2013 as broadcasters, it was ugly.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that you and I, having played the game, we've been on good teams, we've been on bad teams, we've seen the struggles, and then we get this job where we get to watch and talk baseball, and we see the rosters that are being thrown out there. No offense to those guys, but they were not the caliber that we were hoping to cover, and now we see it. But there was some concern early on, and you never know how these guys are going to develop. You know that the Astros do a very good job of scouting and developing, but to have it pay off the way it did really cements the fact that they have a very good program here and an idea of what they're doing.
2015, they bring in A.J. Hinch, and they felt like they were a year or two away. I think they probably ramped things up a little bit in 2015, overshot what they were expected to do that season. But I think a lot of that had to do with A.J. Hinch and what he was able to do and bring guys together. And he was further evidence of that transparency, even with us, of what can happen when you communicate well.
No, the communication, I think, is the key. And obviously A.J. Hinch going to that secondary school at Stanford and getting the psychology degree was impressive. But he also worked in the front office. So I think the communication that you're talking about between manager and front office, it was unique, because A.J. had the experience in San Diego in working in that front office type situation. So he understood how to speak in a front office type way. And also he understands how to communicate with a team, because there's got to be a certain relationship between your manager and your clubhouse, which has got to be stronger than the relationship between the manager and the front office, the general manager. You still have to connect with those guys in the dugout and have their trust. And A.J.'s done a phenomenal job at that. And I also think A.J.'s done a very good job of understanding what his club needs and relaying that to Jeff Luhnow.
You know, when you're talking about what your club needs, I think one of the things that really connected everybody was a strong presence in the Latin corner of the clubhouse.
Absolutely.
So to speak. So you're talking about the bench coach, Alex Cora, and Carlos Beltran, who was that veteran who was able to keep everybody together. Now those two guys are not in the clubhouse this year. What kind of adjustment do you think they're going to have to make sure that everybody is as cohesive as they've been the last year and a half?
I'm not sure if they're going to actually have to make too many adjustments. I think it was great that Carlos Beltran and Alex Cora were here and they moved on, but I think they left an indelible mark on guys like Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve. And now I think it's Jose Altuve's time. He is a leader in the physical sense, where he goes out and plays the game hard every day, works hard underneath. He does a lot of things that even you and I don't get to see that other guys in the clubhouse feed off of. If I'm watching a guy who's an MVP caliber type ball player in the cage more than I am, that tells me something. That tells me I got to get in there. And if this guy's working as hard as he is, I should be working equally as hard, if not more, because he's already the leader of the team. But now he has a chance, learning from Carlos Beltran, has the World Series championship, the postseason experience. And now a lot of that is going to translate to some of the other guys in that clubhouse. But it's him and Carlos Correa up the middle for me that is going to have to take over that clubhouse and maybe carry the torch that you're talking about for the Latin guys in there.
You're listening to Astral Line. We're at Plucker's Wing Bar on 1400 North Shepherd. Astral Line, of course, brought to you by Carbach Brewing Company. And you can submit questions at hashtag Astral Line. Danny Ferris is going to be taking care of those. He's our social media director, along with Lauren Blackwell. You guys have any questions yet? Danny, you got a question for Blummer from social media?
Not quite. I'm trying to pull this up, having some internet issues right now.
I've got a question.
I appreciate you blaming it on the internet.
I'll have it for you just a second.
I've got a question for you, Blummer. When you're talking about personalities in the clubhouse, and when you've been out there and you played in clubhouses, and the Astros brought in different personalities, one of them Josh Reddick, one of them Brian McCann. They're still on this team for a couple more years. What do those type of personalities mean to a club?
I think we heard about Brian McCann just as far as receiving, working with the pitching staff. We knew that the Astros had a good pitching staff and they were going to nurture some of these guys and get them here. I think that was the main thing, because Brian McCann coming up through the Atlanta Braves, I think, learned a lot from Leo Mazzoni and Jeff Cox and a lot of these guys. And, you know, obviously having some Hall of Famers floating around that clubhouse every once in a while, John Smoltzes, Greg Maddoxes, Tom Glavine. So he's accrued a ton of knowledge, and I think that helps him work with guys like Dallas Keuchel, a young Lance McCullers. But Josh Reddick is another guy. He's a grinder. He's one of those guys who's complete dirtbag, goes out there, plays hard, sweaty, gross, getting dirty.
You say gross.
Slamming helmets. He takes a trip to Snapville, I think, every game, which is great because it shows the intensity and the willingness to go out there and play as hard as he can for 162 games. But those guys brought also the mentality of contact. The Astros struck out a ton, and now they're a high-contact team and a high-slugging team, and a lot of it has to do with those guys filling the gap in the bottom part of that order.
All right, Blummer, let's talk about some hot stove news. And we just got something within the last hour that Christian Yelich of the Marlins was traded to the Milwaukee Brewers. Four prospects, three of them in the top 100 of the Milwaukee Brewers system, or top 100 of all of minor league baseball. So a nice haul for Christian Yelich. Where do you sit on the side where Yelich's agent came out and said that relationships between Yelich and the front office with Miami was irretrievably broken at that point?
Well, my goodness, what the Florida Marlins or Miami Marlins or whatever we're calling them these days, Jeffrey Loria was a mercurial owner, to say the least. Uh-huh. Sampson, the president of operations out there, was mercurial, to say the least. A relationship with the city, with the stadium, and then fire-selling everybody there. Now you've got Derek Jeter and that ownership group coming in. And Christian Yelich is a very good ball player. There was part of me that actually was hoping that the Astros were maybe having some sneaky conversations
because
about bringing
him. It's a great contract, too.
It's a great contract, and he's a phenomenal talent who would fit into this ballpark and this situation great. But if I'm Christian Yelich, a young ball player, a very good contract, and I'm watching you just dismantle the guys around me that I grew up with and played extremely good baseball with, I'm going to be disappointed. I'm going to ask for a way out, too. I think he created leverage with that contract, and I think he also created leverage by what the front office was doing and took advantage of it. Now he's going to a team that's competing in the National League Central.
So you feel like he has the right to be able to kind of go out there? Well,
you signed a deal. You did sign a deal, but did you sign the deal knowing that you're going to fire? If you told Christian Yelich, I'm going to get rid of Giancarlo Stanton and half of your ball club, would you still sign this deal? He may, because the money's nice and it's guaranteed, but I'm not sure.
It gives you a lot of security.
A ton of security, but if you're going to go out there and wear it for 110 games a year and take the loss?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to say. It is a tough call, but at that time, whether or not they were going through that or not, he took that security as a player. So I have a hard time. I'm glad that he's not the one that came out and said it, and that his agent was the one that came out and said, hey, you know, we feel like the Marlins should look into trading this player, because I think of a player coming out with that fan base who's been loyal to, you know, even with
that would go a long way, too, if you think about it. I mean, Christian Yelich has, you know, endeared himself to the people in Miami by playing like that. If he did stick around, that would go even further.
That's right.
With that fan base. But it would have been a very tough haul to go out there and play in front of 10,000 people in that stadium, because they're not going to be turned on to buy tickets to watch up just him.
Right. Let's talk about how frozen this free agency process has been. I mean,
this is unlike anything you and I are accustomed to.
Well, we haven't seen this in 9 or 10 years.
Yeah.
Something this frozen as far as the free agency. Last year, 9 players in the offseason signed 4-plus-year deals. This year, as we speak right now, nobody has signed a deal more than 3 years as a free agent so far this offseason. There's probably going to be a couple before all is said and done, but as a person who played in this game for upwards of 13 years, what would you feel like at this point with 4 daughters and a wife at home this time of year, not knowing where you're going to be?
I'd be all over the panic button right now. I'd be calling my agent on a daily basis going, hey, man, take another million off. Take this off. I'll do this. I'll do that.
Is that how you would go about it?
You say, I know, hey, you got to hold your – me?
Uh-huh.
I'd have to take a pay cut. But if I'm J.D. Martinez or one of these other guys that's going to garner –
Arrieta, Darvish.
Yeah. I mean, they're still heavy hitters as far as quality pitching, quality starters, and J.D. Martinez in the outfield. So those guys are going to have to stick to their guns. But the owners right now are – going to push them. They're going to see what it's going to take to get these guys to sign. But there would be a sense of panic, because right now all those guys that you just named are getting ready for something. They don't know what or
where.
They don't
know where they're going.
Yeah.
And that's very disconcerting.
And you've got your kids are in school. Your wife is going, hey, where am I packing the truck? Where are we sending this thing? What are we doing? So it's an extremely tough situation, but I think it's the evolution of baseball. The baseball is getting younger, contracts are getting shorter, and they're expecting more bang for their buck.
Maybe front offices are just getting smarter too.
Absolutely. I mean, you and I both know, covering the Houston Astros, that a lot of the numbers that we look at now, or at least a lot of the numbers I look at now, have changed from 2013-14, and I don't completely get it, but I do understand what they're heading towards.
Well, let's talk a lot more about this, Blummer. You're listening to Astralon, presented by Carbach Brewing Company. Check them out at carbachbrewing.com. We'll be back with Jeff Blum right after this on the Houston Astros Radio Network, and we'll be right back with segment 2 in just a moment. Well, the spring opener is just 29 days away on February 23rd at the ballpark of the Palm Beaches. Before you know it, make your plans to see the World Series champion Houston Astros in West Palm Beach, Florida. For all theirs is to see and do, visit thepalmbeaches.com. And spring training, one of the best times of the year for a baseball player. Hello, everybody. I'm Steve Sparks, along with Jeff Blum as our guest tonight, the color analyst on AT&T Sports Net Southwest.
Nice.
Is that it?
Right by the second segment. I like it.
Is that it?
Do you like spring?
I love spring training. As a player, I loved it. I mean,
did you really?
Yeah.
Because you're a pitcher.
Because I was a pitcher, yeah. You only had to pitch
times.
Every fifth day. Tee times, get to play a little golf. But there was only one spring training in my entire career where I wasn't guaranteed a spot on our roster. So toward the end of spring training, I didn't like it as much as I did at the beginning. And with that being said, the Astros announcing their non-roster invitees. What's it like for a young player, you coming up as a major leaguer, 1999 with the Expos? Early on in your career, you may have come to a spring training or two before you made a team. But what was that like, first spring training or two?
I was in, actually, at the end of 1998. I had elbow surgery at the end of 1998 in Triple A. Rehabbed my way, finished the season in Double A. So there was a lot of question marks around my career. So I actually enrolled in classes at Cal.
Really?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? I was enrolled in classes. I was planning on that was going to be my last season in professional baseball. I was going to be 25 years old, and I was like, I can't be doing this too much longer. I got to get life going here pretty quick because things aren't looking too good. And I got the invite in 1999. It was also the same year I met my wife. So a lot of things were happening for me, but I got that
26 years old then, right?
Yeah. Invitee, and I get to go to spring training. I had number 83 on my back, and I couldn't have been happier. I mean, I went out, you know, to white out, make sure with the referee I was in the right spot on the line, and I took off running, man. It was the time of my life. Felipe Alou, you know, kept asking me what position I played. You know, hey, what the position do you play? And I kept saying, yeah, whatever you want me to. Yeah. I would do whatever it took to get to the big leagues, and I had a really good spring training. Went to Triple A that season, and August 9th, 1999, I made my debut and never looked back.
Hey, 3 years previously, you played for a team in Harrisburg in Double A.
Yeah.
You guys won the league championship.
Oh, yeah. Hall of Famer on that team.
You were 23, and there was a guy 2 years your junior, Vladimir Guerrero.
Beast.
21 years old in Double A, hit 360.
Dude.
He's dropping bombs.
No joke.
You knew it, right?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me?
You knew he was a Hall of Famer.
Oh, my gosh. We would be in spring training, instructional league, and you'd watch this kid, and you're just going, that guy is so good right now.
21 years old, skinny and strong.
Had no idea. I mean, just had the instincts, had the tools, and made it happen. I've heard a lot of people compare him to Roberto Clemente. And,
wow.
I can't argue with that. I mean, a lot of the video and the stuff I see from Roberto Clemente, I almost think Vladdy's that much better just because I got to watch him on a daily basis. But the guy was an absolute freak of nature. I've got so many stories on Vladdy that would probably wear out this show.
He got
the rest
a little
of the
preferential
time.
Treatment, right?
Dude, are you kidding me?
He got to do whatever he wanted.
Hey, day games, he would have – this is back in the PlayStation days. Day games, he'd have his feet up on the counter playing PlayStation, and I'd walk by on my way to the cage for the second time, and I go, Vladdy, what are you doing? He goes, I play the baseball on the PlayStation. I said, all right, who are you facing? He goes, who are we facing today? I go, Tom Glavine. He goes, I'm facing Tom Glavine. He's facing Tom. That was his scouting report was on PlayStation, and he'd go out there and take a changeup down and away and go Oppo Taco
just
like nothing. Pete McCannon was our third base coach, and he'd come down.
This is what I wanted you to tell about.
Oh, man. I'd be sitting on the bench, me, Ryan McGuire, Mike Mordecai, Orlando Merced, and, you know, a couple other guys. And he would do something. He would take a slider down and in, hit it out the other way at the Big O, which was not easy to do.
So and Pete McCannon was the third base coach,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Pete was he's a special breed.
And he's the manager for the Phillies now.
And he would come down after the inning, after Vladdy hits this mammoth bomb the other way, and look at me, and he'd go, you. And you,
pointing at guys in the dugout,
will never be as good as that guy. we had no comeback because we knew he was right.
Yeah.
He was a phenomenal talent.
Trevor Hoffman, another one of your teammates.
Another one of my teammates.
Elected into the Hall of Fame yesterday as well. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot because Trevor's one of the better teammates I've ever had in my life and one of the better human beings that I've ever met. But a lot of these guys that are going to the Hall now, I've actually been lucky enough to be teammates with all three last year.
Mm-hmm.
Pudge, Tim Raines, and Baggy, obviously. Craig Biggio. But now you get to see Vladdy was a phenomenal guy in the clubhouse. Trevor Hoffman, one of the best. Trevor was a guy who showed up. My first year was 2005 with the San Diego Padres, and my wife threw a birthday party at our house, which is about 45 minutes north of San Diego. I've known Trevor for about 2 months. Guess who shows up at my birthday party?
You're kidding.
No, I swear to you.
He was there.
He was there, and I texted him last night, texted me right back. He is incredible, and you know as well as I do that he didn't have that electric arm, so what I appreciate most about Trevor is the Bugs Bunny changeup that he had, the fastball kept losing velocity, but the changeup was still effective. But he learned how to pitch and continued to pitch in those high-leverage situations. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Did you ever hear the story, and I think he told Buster Olney not too long ago, the reason why he lost all that velocity was he dove in to the ocean at some point, and his arms were outstretched, and he felt like he jammed his shoulder.
Are you serious?
And he said it felt like almost that air was letting out of a tire. He could feel the compression.
Oh, man.
And what do you know? I mean, he shows up to spring training the next year and loses 5 or 6 miles per hour. And like you said, it diminished and diminished, but he still had enough differential in his changeup in that fastball to carve out a major league Hall of Fame career.
No, his arm action on the changeup was the best I've ever seen in my life. And I had the misfortune of playing against him, you know, in 99, 2000, right at the height of what the San Diego Padres are doing. They just came back. They just got done getting beat by the Yankees in 98. But he was throwing 95 with that changeup. And, I mean, I'd swing it at three times. That's why we call it a Bugs Bunny changeup, because you could
strike
swing
one,
it at three,
two, strike three
before it got to the plate. The Hell's Bells entrance. I mean, he was one of the true, like, what we played
the
with
innovator.
Matt Clark yesterday. Yeah, but, I mean, it was like a WWE entrance. I mean, when you heard the first bong of that bell, you went,
sent chills
crap.
Down your spine.
Yeah, here it comes. And, you know, at old Jack Murphy Stadium, the stands were right on top of you. You could feel the roof of the dugout bouncing a little bit. So it was a good time. And it was even better to play behind him because I actually recorded the final out of his 479th save that actually broke this all-time saves record.
About that?
Yeah.
That was a big deal. All right, nine, I believe, Hall of Famers that you played with. And you
How
mentioned
about that?
You mentioned quite a few of them, including the three from last year, but two this year with Vladimir and Trevor Hoffman. Jim Thome and Chipper, of course, going in this year.
Larry.
But you played with Tim Raines, Bagwell, Pudge, Frank Thomas, Biggio, Greg Maddux, Mike Piazza, which I didn't know. I forgot that he was with San Diego for that year. And Vladimir and Trevor. So that's pretty cool. Any common threads with the Hall of Famers? Or are they all just unique in their own sense?
They're unique in their own sense, and they all brought something different to the table. But every one of those guys, to a man, was very approachable and probably the most hyper-knowledgeable guys about the game that I've ever talked to. And they did a very good job. Sometimes I talked to Tony Gwynn a couple times when I was with San Diego before he passed away. And you'd have a conversation with him, and your jaw would drop because he spoke a completely different language about hitting.
It hard to understand?
It was incredibly hard to understand. Oh. It was so intricate and so detailed that I was just like, man, I just try and swing as hard as I can. You know, but he was so intricate about what he did. But all these other guys did a very good job of translating and understanding how hard it was to get to the position they were at, and they were more than open about the information they wanted to give you to try and make you a better ball player.
Well, you're listening to Astros Radio right here in Houston on our flagship Sports Talk 790 KBME and 99.1 FM HD2, longtime partners and affiliates of the Astros Radio Network. I'm Steve Sparks, the radio broadcaster for the Astros, along with Jeff Blum. And Blummer, one of my favorite things we do during the course of the season is our last-minute jogs over to the other guy's booth to say, hey, what do you got on this pitcher? Or, hey, what do you got on this hitter? So because, you know, one being a pitcher and one being a hitter, it's hard to understand unless I can see it through your eyes for me as a hitter. And what you're seeing is so I can watch for something. And what have you learned as a broadcaster at this point and what to do to become better at your job?
And what you're talking about is that we will literally, in middle of the game at a commercial break, we will run back and forth. And there's been actually two or three times where we've kind of met in the hallway because we had similar questions about what was going on, whether it be what a pitcher is doing, like you're saying, in a game, or what do you see from a hitter or what I see from a hitter. What I've learned is patience. Being in that color analyst seat, we enjoy the luxury. And you do play-by-play very good, but I don't have a chance to do that. So I've learned to be patient and sit back, watch the play unfold, let Todd make the call, you know, get loud, show that inflection in the voice, and have some fun with it while I sit back and kind of watch and absorb everything that's going on and really think about the swing. So when the replay comes back on for us, I know you don't have the luxury of that, but when the replay comes back on for me,
you're ready.
I can be ready to go with it and enjoy the moment. So I get to actually get to be a fan for about 10 seconds while the play is unfolding and really think about what is going on and maybe see some things that maybe fans at home aren't seeing and kind of bring their attention to when they see the replay.
I don't think a lot of people realize that you have a big input in what gets shown back.
Because
you have a button where you can talk to the people in the truck and say, hey, I'd love to see a replay of this.
Oh, yeah. There's communication between me and the truck. I have two buttons in front of me. One's a cough button, which I learned early on is a very effective button for some of the things I want to say and don't want to be heard. And then there's also another button in there that puts me in direct contact with guys in the truck, the producer and the director down there. And I can say, hey, can you replay this angle? Can you look at this angle? Can you give me another shot of that? Or, hey, maybe in a couple innings, could we go back and revisit that home run? Mm-hmm. So I do have a lot of input in that, and I'm lucky enough to work with a crew that is very good at listening to what we want to see or what we feel the fans should go out there and see, and hopefully they're enjoying it.
That's awesome. Jeff Blum is our guest tonight. Danny Ferris, our social media coordinator, has a couple of questions. What's the first one, Danny?
Real quick, before I get to the questions, fun fact about Jeff Blum over here. You guys are talking about the Hall of Fame.
Boy.
He's a lifetime 270 hitter against Hall of Famers. Shout out to Jeff Blum.
Like it, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, who comes up with that split? I appreciate it.
It was available. 270, three home runs, four ribs. But to questions coming in from social, with spring training, we just had our release for non-roster invitees coming in. Kyle Tucker being on that list, he's one of the top prospects in the game. Have you guys seen him play? What do you guys think about him? How do you guys see him turning out in 2018?
What do you want, me or you?
No, I think it's you. He's a hitter. Yeah, I've got.
Oh,
my,
you're watching the game. Just to,
I'm
I mean,
watching
we've
the game
the
as
game.
A pitcher. When I watch,
you've
the
taught
swing.
Me how to watch pitchers. I hopefully you know how to watch a hitter now.
I think he's a phenomenal talent. And when you watch it, I mean, this is crazy to even think about. You could put him and Ted Williams swings.
That's the name we keep hearing the comparisons with.
It's not far-fetched. I mean, he's that strong. He's got that type of leverage. He's in the strike zone that long. You're always going to be challenged when you have a swing of that length inside with fastballs to see if you can handle that. I know as a pitcher, that's where guys are going to go first.
And you see, that's how I'm looking to see where his strengths are. You're actually, as a pitcher, you're looking to see where
weaknesses.
His weaknesses are.
Sure.
And what I saw also with you, the two things that you said, talent and strength. He's a wiry guy,
right.
And Ted Williams was a wiry guy also, but he could drive the ball to the ballpark because they have very good knowledge of their swings, but they're also extremely talented and good hitters like Jose Altuve, for one, just to pick on one, do a very good job of figuring out how to get the barrel to the baseball. And when I first saw Kyle Tucker swing in spring training last year, I went, oh, my gosh, he's going to get destroyed on the inside half. He got blown up. Next AB, he comes up. They try to come in the kitchen again, which is the inside to me, the kitchen.
Got the barrel there.
He turned and burned on this thing and launched it foul, but it was home run distance, but he launched it foul, and he put people on notice that he's able to get to that inside corner. So it gives you an idea that he has a good mentality of what his strengths and weaknesses are and how to get the barrel to the baseball.
Now for me, when I'm talking about somebody being able to get to a ball, get the barrel to that inside corner, for me, they have to keep it fair.
Yeah. Carlos Correa is a
otherwise,
freak at
otherwise
it.
It's a strike.
Yeah, Greg Maddux was a master at doing that. He would literally tell you, I'm going to throw you a fastball in.
Off the plate.
I'm going to watch you yank it foul because you're feeling good about it. You turn on it, you crush it, barrel it up, but big deal. It's just a long, loud out. He goes, what I do after that is what dictates, you know, how the rest of the AB is going to go. Carlos Correa, for me, is one of the guys that they keep trying to bust in, and he keeps keeping it fair and launching it out of the ballpark. He's impressive.
Hey, some people have wondered why Forrest Whitley is not going to be at Major League Spring Training Camp. And I would say this, as a young player, and I would say, especially as a pitcher, and you're going through all these drills and you're throwing to bases and pickoff moves and all this stuff, your first spring training, and you see this every year, all these guys come out so ambitious and they want to impress everybody that they throw so hard to the bases. They get into a game and they pitch one inning, and it's 27 pitches of everything they've got. And I think for a player at his age, to keep him away from Major League spring training, I think you're bound to have him stay more healthy in a controlled environment in the minor league side at this stage of his career.
And I actually think that he is mature enough to understand that situation. Also, both of us had a chance to hang out with Forrest in the Astros caravan.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed with how he thinks about the game. And the conversation with him is probably, hey, we know your stuff's good enough. He's probably paying attention to Twitter. He's probably paying attention to Baseball America. He knows that he's one of the top prospects in all of baseball, and he's a commodity. And I'm sure AJ's had the conversation and said, hey, you're not going to be in big league camp. This has no reflection whatsoever on what we think of you as
He'll
a player.
He'll probably come up and pitch in a couple of games just to get his feet wet, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Are you kidding me? When he's dialed in and ready to go and can give him an inning, they're going to show him off. They're going to showcase him.
All right, well, Jeff Blum, this is Steve Sparks. You're listening to Astro Line presented by Carbach Brewing Company. Check them out at carbachbrewing.com. We'll be back with our guest, Jeff Blum, right after this on the Houston Astros Radio Network.
I was just tremendously excited. I was out with some friends, having a good time for my wife's birthday weekend. And so it was a really good phone call. Yeah, I mean, how do you ask for anything more than to become the world champions? So,
Garrett, what do you think you need to do to just sort of take the next step? I know you were injured a couple of years ago. Last year, your numbers weren't what they were a couple of years ago. Just what do you think you have to do to kind of bring it all together once again?
I mean, I think it boils down to command. I think it boils down to executing pitches. So there are a lot of contributing factors, but you know, I'm just going to trust what I do. Continue to use the resources around me. Try to soak up as much as I can from some of the veterans on this team and some of the really good players. I'm looking forward to working with Brian McCann, and I'm looking forward to you know, a new approach. I know. You know, there are some things that the Astros do that are different, so I'm looking forward to hearing those things and hopefully trying to get a lot better.
There you go. That's Garrett Cole, the press conference he had with the media with the Astros a couple of days after he signed. And you're listening to Astro Line, by the way, brought to you by Carbach Brewing Company. We're at Pluckers on 1400 North Shepherd. And Steve Sparks here along with Astros TV color analyst Jeff Blum. And what a signing. I mean, what a trade for the Astros to get Garrett Cole. And I know you have to give up something to get something, but to get something like Garrett Cole to plug into that rotation is phenomenal.
They did give up something in a couple of big leaguers, Musgrove and
Michael Feliz,
but they did not give up their prize prospects as far as Tucker and Whitley, Forrest Whitley are concerned. I think it's a great trade. Jim Crane called it, and they went out and got him. And he's a fine addition to this rotation. We always talk about throughout the course of the season, in order to go to a world championship, you've got to have depth. And this creates even more depth, adding Garrett Cole to that rotation.
It's awesome. Hey, we just got word that Milwaukee has locked up Lorenzo Cain.
How about David Stearns?
David Stearns, who was the former assistant general manager with the Astros, is making some noise today.
Man, is he ever. Those are great pickups.
Those are fantastic pickups. You got to give up something to get something. But I think once they realize that they may have Lorenzo Cain in their back pocket, they decided, hey, we can afford to give up a couple of our prospects to get a Christian Yelich.
But Milwaukee's also one of those ball clubs that's kind of gone with the youth angle as far as, you know, accruing talent in their minor league system, getting those top prospects, and now they're reaping the benefits of being able to trade them.
Similar to what the Astros have been able to do. So
yep. He
feels like that the time is right to strike. Lauren Blackwell working here with us today, and you got some questions from some of the people here in the audience tonight, Lauren.
Yeah, Jeff, so we know Alex Cora is now managing the Red Sox, so the Astros have brought in Joe Espada, who's the new bench coach. What can you tell us? Jan from Clear Lake wants to know what you know about him and what you can tell us.
I've heard great things about him. I know he has a history with A.J. Hinch, playing with him, I believe, in the minor leagues. But also, I think what's great about Joe is that the Latin angle that we talked about, Carlos Beltran was basically that bench coach or that Latin conduit between A.J. Hinch and some of those young Latin players. I'm sure.
And a Joe's, lot of respect.
Yeah. Joe Espada is going to have that same situation. And where that respect comes from is by working himself into a situation where he was the third base coach for the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. And you want to be under some scrutiny and be tested. Go coach in New York, and he's done that. So I think he's a nice addition to that bench for A.J. Hinch.
All right, Blummer, 2018 Astros season tickets are on sale right now. Enjoy some of the best seats at Minute Maid Park. Save money and receive great benefits throughout the season. Call 1-877-9-ASTROS or visit astros.com/season tickets to get yourself for some 2018 wonderment for this Astros team. Jeff, it's going to be awesome for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
But is this window going to close? What do you have to do to kind of manage things? Have you thought ahead when you're thinking of maybe next year, Dallas Keuchel is a free agent, and there's a couple of years after that, and you're going to have to start to look Marvin Gonzalez, Altuve. You know, there's always going to be Springer. And then
those are big names.
It's hard to fill all of that, and it's going to be a tough task for the front office to keep things replenished.
If you and I were running the team and we had an unlimited budget, we'd just go out there with $100 million and say, you know, how many years do you want to disperse this over, boys, mm-hmm. you know, for each guy. But it's a tough call. You can't do that as an owner or else you're going to go bankrupt. You'd have a very good team, but you would be going bankrupt. And trying.
I love spending other people's money.
It's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to be some tough calls, because not only because these guys are phenomenal talents, but I also think they put themselves in the community. They've become a part of the city. A lot of these, you know, Keuchel lives here, Altuve lives here. These guys all work out here.
Marwin, Lance.
Yeah, that's a great call. I mean, there's so many guys, even George. But these guys, unfortunately, they are extremely good, and unfortunately, they are going to test the market. Whether or not they come back here to Houston is a decision they're going to have to make.
And a lot of people are going to want them.
Yeah. But Kyle Tucker, we talked about when these trades happen, don't get rid of a guy like Kyle Tucker. And the Astros realize that he can be the future of the Astros at some point in the outfield. It can be a Forrest Whitley maybe stepping in when a Dallas Keuchel chooses to leave or not to leave.
Might be Derek Fisher this year.
Yeah.
He's got an opportunity to go into spring training. And this opportunity right now is to be part of a really great baseball team.
Yeah, he doesn't want to look that far ahead.
But he doesn't have to be the guy. How cool is it, though, for Fisher to get an opportunity and not have to be the guy?
You could be a nine-hole hitter. I feel you could be the ninth hitter in the Astros lineup and drive in 75 runs. And that is an absolute luxury to go out there and be in a lineup where you know guys are going to be on base and you're going to have opportunities. But then you're going to also be able to be in that clubhouse and learn how to play championship baseball from these guys, too. I mean, what an environment.
Answer me this. So games changed quite a bit. Your last year was in 2012, but all the shifts started to evolve after you changed. But what the shifts did is it changed the velocity of the hitters.
Yeah.
Instead of hitting the ball on the ground into those shifts, everybody decided, hey, there's more production by getting the ball in the air. So we're starting to see everybody get with this launch angle. But you were taught when you were playing to hit down on the ball, get the ball on the ground or hit line drives, weren't you?
Yeah, mentally it was an exaggeration, and a lot of the instruction, a lot of the teaching you do in the tunnels or in the cages is exaggeration. So you really exaggerated swinging down. That didn't mean you would do it in a game. That meant mentally you're trying to swing down, but to create backspin. But in actuality, when you get in the game, you want your swing to level out, and it usually does because the speed of the game is sped up so much when you're in game action that it's virtually impossible to get directly on top of the ball unless you mishit it. But this day and age, it's interesting because I was taught to stay up the middle, go the other way, drive the ball up the middle the other way. And now we spoke about Ted Williams. Now the mentality in order to beat the shift, Ted Williams said, if they're going to shift on me, I'm just going to hit it over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to the pull side. I'm going to yank this thing.
He was ahead of his time.
He was ahead of his time. Yeah. And I actually read an article over this offseason about Elvis Andrews, who was kind of a Punch and Judy type guy, kind of up the middle the other way, on the ground, numbers didn't translate. The last 2 years, he's gone to a pull and lift, and his numbers, OPS Plus is a sabermetric analytic type number, but his OPS Plus is actually risen because he's gone to the pull and lift mode type approach. So that's what guys are doing now.
How many times did they tell the little guys never to do that?
Ever.
They would find them in the minor leagues.
They would find them. It'd be like Willie Mays Hayes. Yeah, Willie Mays Hayes. You pop the ball up, go down, and give me some push-ups.
All right, we only have one more segment, Blummer. Love talking baseball with you. You're listening to Astro Line, presented by Carbog Brewing Company. We'll be back for one more final segment with our guest, Jeff Plum, after this on the Houston Astros Radio Network. Welcome back to Astro Line, presented by Carbog Brewing Company. Steve Sparks with TV color analyst Jeff Blum. Final segment. We're at Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 North Shepherd. Love talking baseball with you, buddy.
It's good.
All right, clock, the time clock, and the speed-up rules. What do you think so far? And you're hearing one side against the other right now. It sounds like the players are pretty much against speeding things up.
Yeah, I understand.
Not speeding things up, but to have an
adjustments
a clock
to the game, yeah.
Right.
Thing for me, man, the mound visits. Good Lord.
That was it for me.
Cut down the mound visits. That was driving me crazy. And, you know, now being on the broadcast side, trying to fill the time when those guys keep going out there kills me, and it kills the game. There's momentum, and I understand that there's purpose behind it, but it kills the momentum of the game. I wanted to ask you about the 20-second clock because when do they start it? You know, when do you not start it? When do you stop it? There's so many things around that pitch clock.
There's going to be so many things where somebody's going to act like they have something in their eye.
Yeah, or I got to tie my shoe. Or, you know, there's
ways around that. So I'm not a big fan
of the pitch clock unless you made it like 35, like a shot clock. Yeah.
For whatever reason, I pitch very quickly. I didn't waste any time, never strayed away from the mound. I don't understand why you can't get on the mound and get a pitch thrown by 10 or 15 seconds. I have no idea.
Well, as a hitter, I know that if a guy was going quick to the mound, I tried to slow him down. So, you know, that's why another reason why I think this pitch clock at 20 seconds, hitters are going, nope, I don't want to be rushed into the box because it's going to mess with my approach. It's going to mess with my rhythm. It's going to mess with my, you know, everything.
I say forget your approach. I don't care about your approach. You're making the game very boring by stepping out and taking a long time in between
pitches.
That's
my money,
man. Don't you agree, though? I mean, not just as a broadcaster, but as a viewer watching games on television, I want to see the ball in play.
Yes.
And I don't want to see all these ticks and all your routines in between pitches.
As a player, as a pitcher, as a position player, a hitter, you're going to get bad calls called on you. You don't have to take a lap to the dugout to go yell at your guys in the dugout and come back. Stay in the dirt. Take it on the chin like everybody else has in the history of the game. Get back in the box and create an opportunity by getting a better pitch to hit.
Yeah. I just don't want to be that crusty guy who
to
push things along, but I think it's gotten a little too far
of
hand, especially with the mound visits, as you mentioned, where they're changing their signs so often.
Well, was it Lance McCullers that tweeted out the issue is a lot of the sign stealing that's going on. It's getting so much more intricate that they've got to change the signs a little more frequently.
Be smart enough to have two or three sets of signs and get it done.
Thank you.
You have a set of signs that changes every pitch anyway,
adjust.
Then it's going to be pretty tough to figure them out. Danny Ferris, with social media coordinator with the Astros, got a question for Blummer?
Yes, I got a couple questions. The first one comes from Jake Holtrop. Looks like he's out of Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
Would Blummer ever consider frosting his tips again?
Oh, yeah. Jake. That's a great question, Jake.
I understood how good the Astros were because I had gotten questions like, well, if the Astros win, you know, bleach your hair again. I'm like, no chance. These guys are going to win in the next 2 years. And sure enough, they go out and win. But in order for me to frost my tips, something miraculous would have to happen, like maybe snowing twice in Houston. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey.
I'm too old to frost my tips. My daughters are pulling out pictures of my bleached hair, my issues that I had when I was playing, and they're going, Dad, what is this? I'm like, I don't know who that guy is.
Next time you'll be doing something to your hair, it's going to be just for men.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, May 3rd, 2005, you had triplets, okay? May 3rd, 2005. And there was tough circumstances before they were born. What is that like for a player? And a lot of people don't realize that are a lot of things that are tough going on in players' lives sometimes that are a reason for maybe subpar performance. Tell me what that did. I mean, you guys had some real life decisions to make, and we won't go into that. But
I was going
to
say,
how hard is that on a guy's mental state, and what's that do to you as a player?
It does a lot because, you know, you keep hearing the phrase, we're all human. We are all human beings, you know, outside of the game, inside the game, but. There are moments where you're going to be challenged, you're going to be tested, you're going to have to make decisions that are way out of the realm of your thoughts, and that was one of those moments. My wife was on bed rest for the first month of the season, and we had a 15-month-old daughter at the time. So here's my routine. I would get home from a game. I would tell the nanny, I said, you can go home now. I've got my daughter, spent the night with my daughter, woke up the next morning at 7 a.m., hung out with her, made breakfast, had a great time, had a blast. Around 1 o'clock, I would go to the hospital, meet my wife.
Brutal.
And drop her off with the nanny, and then I would come back. That was before the triplets were born. The triplets were born, then they were in the NICU for 2 months. So 2 months after that, I was making laps going to the NICU after games and hanging out with them, waking up. So, I mean, you know, life still happens even though baseball is happening. That's
right.
Where you've got to try and find a balance.
And you don't want to bring out any excuses, but people,
no.
I think fans in particular, need to keep in mind, sometimes there's things going on in players' lives that have a real result in what's going on the field.
And it may not be, at home, it may not seem like a big deal, but to that player at that given moment, that is their world, and it may be something that they're having a tough time dealing with.
All right, want to get a couple of things in real quick, Blummer. You and I are going to be together on Sunday. BobAllenOpen.com. If you fans want to go to see that. Top Golf, we're going to have a cool chance. The World Series trophy is going to be there from 5 to 6. But in spring, at Top Golf, we're going to raise a lot of money for the Sunshine Kids and have a little fun for a couple hours to raise money. So you and I will be there, and a lot of other celebrities around the city of Houston, including Bill Brown, Julia Morales, Kevin Nashenfelder, Dan Pastorini.
Julia
is non-athletic as can be.
Right? It's unbelievable. She is so good at her job.
She's a poser.
She's terrible at golf.
Julia's a poser. All right. Want to say hello? Or we want to say thank you to Josh C., our studio engineer, Matt Bolt, who always does a fantastic job with getting things hooked up here at Pluckers and during our in-game broadcast. Blummer, thanks a lot for catching up. Real quick, Tim Tebow, you like the idea that a guy who hasn't really spent that much time in the minor leagues or really had that much success gets a chance to go to Major League spring training?
Baseball revolves around money. He's going to put people in the seats. That's why he's there.
You okay with that?
Garth Brooks did it. I was okay with Garth going out there and taking a couple hacks.
You happy you moved to Houston last offseason?
I was, but I thought the winter was supposed to be the good weather. I'm tired. I got to put my jackets away. I put that box in my attic for a reason. I had to break it out. I can't wait to pack that thing back up and get some of this good spring weather.
Hey,
I love it here.
You took John Smoltz deep. You took Greg Maddux deep. You took Randy Johnson deep. Billy Wagner deep. You took Kerry Wood deep twice. Who are you most proud of taking deep?
Really? It's between Maddux and Smoltz.
Yeah.
Dude, because early on in my career, 99, 2000, I was getting absolutely beat down my rookie year by Smoltz, Glavin, and Maddux. And to finally, granted, they were a little bit older, but I took them deep, yeah. It's good to have those guys in your book.
Last thing I want to tell you, April 26, 1973, you were born. April 26, 1973, Granny from the Beverly Hillbillies passed away. So she opened up the door for you. Irene Ryan.
One superstar leaves, another one shows up.
All right, it's Jeff Blummer. Blummer, thanks a lot for catching up with us. Always love talking baseball
love
with
you. Love being on with you, man.
Love being with you in particular.
Love all the fans here, too.
Thanks once again to Pluckers, to Carbach Brewing Company.com. Thanks again to Lauren Blackwell and Danny Ferris. Matt Bolts is the best engineer of all time. And we will be back next week, Robert Ford, on Wednesday, January 25th, January 31st, for the next Astro Line. Thanks, everybody.
Official off-season show presented by Carbach Brewing Company. Astro Line.